for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Earlier this month, Congress passed a $600 million border security bill. The aim is to stop illegal immigrants and Mexican drug smugglers from crossing the nation's southwest border. Political stakes are high, especially as November midterm elections draw near. Arizona enacted a controversial immigration law, but new legislation on the federal level is not likely to come about anytime soon. Janet Napolitano, Homeland Security Secretary, former Arizona governor, joins me in the studio to talk about the department under her leadership and the challenges ahead. As you well know, you're invited to join the conversation. Call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning to you, Madam Secretary. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
Tell me how the responsibilities of the Department of Homeland Security have evolved.
Well, as you know, the department was created after 9/11 and is an amalgam of 23 different federal agencies under one roof, and it is now the third largest federal department next to the Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs. And one of our goals is to take those 23 and mold them into what we call one DHS with a focus on counterterrorism, securing the borders, immigration enforcement, cyberspace protection, and then the ability to prepare for and respond to disasters. Those are really our five major missions.
So how large in terms of personnel is the Department of Homeland Security?
Around 230,000 employees plus another probably 200,000 contractors.
Wow.
It's huge.
So from your perspective, as we sit here today, what do you feel to be the greatest challenge?
Well, I think I just outlined the five major ones, but we were founded on 9/11 and counterterrorism, and our value added in that battle is to make sure that we have a security architecture across the country that involves state, local, tribal law enforcement, that information is being shared to them and that we're receiving information back. And then another thing we're doing is trying to involve citizens at large. And so, for example, we have started something called the See Something, Say Something campaign.
What does that mean?
It means that if you see something that's unusual, an unattended package, a passenger acting strangely and taking what looks like surveillance photos, things of that sort, to report them to a designated number. We have trained operators, and they allow law enforcement to respond in an appropriate way.
What is that designated number?
Well, it varies. And so, for example, on Amtrak, it'll be one number.
In
D.C., which has started, the District of Columbia has its campaign, it has another number. So that will vary. But the motto, if you see something, say something, is the national motto that we are now spreading across the country.
But I must say, it would seem that border security in the southern part of the country has really not only become an issue facing you, but a red hot political issue. How is the $600 million that the Congress has just designated going to help you in that fight?
Well, it will help us in several ways. We have been, over the last 18 months, moving large amounts of resources to the southwest border. That needs to be a safe and secure area.
You mean human resources?
I mean that. I mean technology as well and infrastructure. So what the $600 million allows us to do is to hire up to, 1,000 to 1,500 more Border Patrol agents, 200 more ICE investigators who will work on the drug cartel investigations, to establish two more forward operating bases and obtain two more unmanned aerial vehicle systems. So it's a whole menu of things that we put in our toolbox to secure that border from California to Texas.
But here you have Arizona acting out on its own. How does that complicate what you do and what the president is trying to achieve?
Well, I think, and I'm the former governor of Arizona, the former attorney general of Arizona, and the former U.S. attorney for Arizona. I know that border extremely well. I've spent 17 plus years working that border. And I think regrettably, some of the laws passed in Arizona that were based on inaccurate information. But the plain fact of the matter is that there's more Border Patrol agents, there's more technology, there's more resources at that border than ever before. And the $600 million that the Congress just passed under the leadership of Senator Schumer and Senator McCaskill, but that $600 million, a lot of that will go to further secure the Arizona border.
Now, one of the major critics of the administration, and certainly one of your critics, Senator John McCain, was quoted in the Arizona Republic last week as saying that the state of Arizona has yet to see any of the 524 National Guard troops promised. So,
well, I think that's a mischaracterization, but here's the deal. The president approved the use of National Guard at the border. 500 plus are designated for Arizona. But as we have briefed members of the Congress and others, that will be a deployment that begins now with command and control going in. And then the actual soldiers who are being trained will begin arriving over the next 30 to 60 days.
So when would you hope to have a full contingent of 524 additional security officers in place?
There is a deployment schedule, but I would say sometime around the end of September, middle of October.
Janet Napolitano, she is the Secretary of Homeland Security, former Governor of Arizona. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. I gather that the number of illegal immigrants arrested by Border Patrol has declined rather significantly in recent years. Why is that?
Well, we think that it's because there are way fewer people attempting to cross. And when you say decline significantly, it's really significantly, because it was not too long ago that apprehensions, say, for example, in Arizona, were north of 600,000. Now we're down in 200,000. Now, that's still too many, and that's why we keep adding manpower, technology, et cetera, to further secure the border. But the fact that we have strengthened that border, put more law enforcement down there, and I think combined with the downturn in the U.S. economy, I think that's an important factor as well.
So people are not coming.
They're just not coming.
Yeah.
And that allows us to focus on those who are coming, who are drug traffickers and human traffickers, who really are exploiting the border for serious criminal purposes.
Now, here's a comment from a Tucson citizen that was written as an open letter. Says, we border residents invite you or one of your staff to take a tour of the borderland without your Border Patrol guides, meet the real people who are dealing with Border Patrol problems on a day-to-day basis, get out of the bubble, managed information you are surrounded in. This person goes on to say, I can think of a dozen places right now you could see and people you could meet who will assure you the traffic of undocumented immigrants has not been reduced.
I don't know about the reference to the bubble. We are constantly in touch with police chiefs and sheriffs along the border, not just in Arizona, but the whole spread of the border. We've actually given them special grant money, so they have money for overtime and vehicles that they otherwise would not have as well. Those, many of them are very small, sparsely populated counties. They don't have the kind of tax base that allows them to have the local law enforcement structure that one would wish. I will tell you that it is important that we receive that information in unfiltered form. And I think we have a variety of ways that we do receive information in unfiltered form. And our whole effort is to, you know, fill any gaps along the border. And the numbers are the numbers. There are always going to be cases or incidents. That's been going on the U.S.-Mexico border for years. The fact of the matter is that border is as safe as and secure as it's been since I've been working it, and that, as I said before, is over 17 years.
Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. She is also, of course, the former governor of Arizona. We'll take a short break here. More of my questions, and then you join the conversation. 800-433-8850. Welcome back. If you just joined us, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano is with me. We're talking about issues under the aegis of her department, which now has, 230,000 employees plus another 200,000 contractors. If you'd like to join us, 800-433-8850. Madam Secretary, I'm going to take you far afield on this issue of homeland security and talk about the lack of security some people are feeling regarding the President of the United States. Calling him, saying that he has not been truthful, that he is in fact a Muslim, he is not a Christian, saying that this issue of the mosque in New York, this cultural center in New York, is part of the reason they mistrust him, because he has stated his support for that. What is happening in your mind to the feeling of security in the federal government that people around the country seem to be demonstrating?
Well, that's a interesting question. The president obviously is Christian. He obviously was born in the United States. That's another myth that's been around for a long time. And I believe that, you know, it's important to say that even as a nation, we have a fundamental set of values, including the freedom of religion. But the mischaracterization, I think, of the president is unfortunate. I mean, he for him to have to continue to say he's Christian and that he was born in the United States is a distraction. The key issue for us at the Department of Homeland Security is what do we need to do on the counterterrorism front to make sure that the American people are as safe as possible, that we are minimizing risks as much as possible that another attack could occur in the homeland. What do we need to do as the Department of Homeland Security to secure not just the land borders, as we were just discussing, but air and sea as well? We've got TSA and Coast Guard in our department. What do we need to do to make sure that we are prepared for and can respond to disasters of whatever source? And it could be a terrorist attack or something like the BP oil spill in the Gulf, where, again, the Coast Guard is a lead agency, lead department, and that is part of our department as well. So we have a broad range of responsibilities, and I think that's where the focus needs to be.
The focus does need to be there. At the same time, you've seen the polls, same polls that I've seen, that the American people are losing faith and trust in the operation of the U.S. government. I would think that that would concern you.
Well, it does, to the extent that it's based on mischaracterized or inaccurate information. I think that one example is the response to the oil spill in the Gulf, where we quickly had to ascertain what it is we were dealing with. We quickly had to set up a national incident command structure. We quickly had to recognize that we had four states that were deeply involved. Texas, it turns out, wasn't impacted and in any major way. We quickly had to assemble the largest flotilla ever of skimmers and tugs and other vessels to clean that oil and make sure that BP, you know, closed the well, the ocean was cleaned up, and that claims were paid. And it's been an amazing production where at one point in time we had, I think, something like 6,000 vessels organized that we were moving around the Gulf to clean up oil or to burn oil or to skim it and pick it up. And they were in connection with air cover so that the air cover could tell them where to go to pick up oil, et cetera, et cetera. It was an amazing, amazing thing to assemble within 45 days. I'm not sure that assemblage and all that went into it and how quick it really was, because recognize some of these vessels had to come from as far away as Alaska, was clearly communicated to the American people, and they could really see their government at work in a multidimensional way.
And now you have conflicting reports suggesting that whereas the government is saying the oil has been 90% cleaned up or thereabouts, you've got an awful lot of people saying there are these huge plumes beneath the surface of the sea that are infecting the waters. You've also got concerns about the residue of the chemical dispersants. So once again, doubts create.
Right. And the way to deal with that is to be as transparent as possible. For example, one of the reports that's quoted a lot about a plume undersea was done by Woods Hole. But it was based on data that was in June when the oil was still gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. And so we are going to be in touch and work with them and say, let's use the current data.
You're now, saying they're behind the curve.
Well, the data they used was not current. And as of July 15th, there was no new oil gushing into the Gulf. So we want to make that available. We want to invite them and other scientists to the table. And we have and we'll have a very aggressive long-term monitoring program because we want to make sure that even as diluted as the oil is, we want to know its effect on the life cycle of shellfish and of fish itself and other wildlife in the Gulf of Mexico.
There have been questions raised about the Department of Homeland Security's reactions to Freedom of Information requests. Can you talk about that?
Sure. We want to be as transparent as we can be, recognizing, of course, that some of the information we deal with has to be highly classified. We have cleared our FOIA request backlog we came into. We are now processing requests more quickly than ever before, and we're doing our best to deal with really what is we get a lot of FOIA requests.
I'll bet you do.
And we
I'll
are trying
to do.
So we've cleared the backlog, we move them as quickly as possible, quicker than ever before, and we're gonna continue to work on that process.
Do you think that the department has up until now been slower than it should have been in responding to those requests? There was a report on NPR. That requests had been given, requests had been made, no response from Homeland Security.
Well, I can't comment too much except to say that we have a number of people now who work full-time only on FOIA requests, and our goal is to be as transparent as possible and to meet not just the letter but the spirit of that law.
But haven't FOIA requests in the past simply been handled by civil servants? Why would you have to have specially trained people for that?
Well, to make sure that we are being responsive and to make sure that information is being processed accurately, fully, and completely. In a huge department, one of the things we want to have happen is that there's a consistency to response. In other words, that there's a Department of Homeland Security response to FOIA requests. You're logical when you begin. Each department has its own FOIA office, and they're doing their own thing. And we want to have one consistent response. We want to be get the information out. As I said, clear the backlog, do it as quickly as possible. We're doing that now more than ever before, and be as transparent as we can be.
Give me your reaction to WikiLeaks.
Oh, I think. Overall, it's unfortunate. I think that I do not have and have not done an analysis as to whether what was put on was actually available through other open source sources. But having it all consolidated and in one place certainly was not helpful.
Do you think the national security has been damaged because of those WikiLeaks?
I think there has been concern expressed by the Secretary of Defense, among others, that there have been some impacts. Time, unfortunately, will tell. But again, we need to be, as a government, the Obama administration wants to be as forward-leaning as we possibly can be in terms of sharing information, making information available. We think we're doing that at DHS. We're going to continue to work on that process.
Of course, you've got a huge other additional problem, which is the internet, the World Wide Web, the way information can be transmitted instantly. How is the Department of Homeland Security upgrading its own base of operations to take a look at that?
Well, one of the major areas that we have as a responsibility, quite frankly, is the protection of cyberspace for the civilian side of the government, i.e. not the Department of Defense, but everything else, plus connecting with the private sector in terms of their own protection. So we have aggressively moved to set up our own cyber units. We've been hiring like crazy. If anybody out there is a cybersecurity expert and they're looking for a job, you come see us, because we have direct hiring authority now from the Office of Personnel Management. We've set up a big center in Virginia, and we are moving like crazy to make sure that we are ahead of the curve in the cyberspace
but
arena.
But surely you know as well as I do that viruses are being created as quickly as somebody can detect them, new ones.
Indeed. And so it's all about detection, protection, prevention. And there's a lot of exciting and new technologies involved. We are really at the cutting edge of a new theater, if you want to think about that, a theater of warfare, if I could use that phrase. And I don't mean in a nation state way, but what I do mean is the protection of all of the commerce, all of the items that must proceed through cyber as opposed to other means of communication.
I mean, you've drawn back on the words nation/state. On the other hand, haven't there been some particular viruses that have come in, perhaps from China, perhaps from elsewhere, that could have seriously damaged?
Well, I think the word there is perhaps. And, you know, there's a difference between a virus originating at some place versus this being a nation state sort of conflict. We see viruses being generated all over the world and different types and means of attack. We want to make sure, for example, that our key infrastructure, which is in private hands, I mean, utilities, water companies and the like, they're normally either private or owned by local municipalities. We want to make sure that they have protected their own infrastructure. That's a big project and something that we are really focused upon, because we know that, you know, that's where we are. We're in 2010.
Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. One other question for you. I know at the 2000 Democratic National Convention, you spoke shortly after having a mastectomy. I know you were in great pain then. That was 10 years ago. Tell us how you are now.
I'm great. I had great medical care. I'm 10 years is kind of a significant milestone. You kind of think about it a little bit. But obviously, I've had a very productive time since then, and my health is very, very good. So thank you for asking.
Do you talk about breast cancer to people who are interested in the subject? There is a series running on HBO about cancer and the way that people become afraid to even mention the word.
Actually, are you talking about the Laura Linney show? I saw that the other night, and it's pretty interesting. Is it supposed to be a comedy? I don't know. It's kind of strange. But in any event, you know, when people ask, I'll respond. I think the important thing when you get such a diagnosis is to get information, because people hear the word cancer and they immediately think, you know, terminal illness, when the plain fact of the matter is that even though we haven't, discovered a cure for cancer, we certainly have discovered lots of different treatments that allow people to go ahead and live normal lives.
But there are those who are afraid to even confront it in themselves and fear going to the doctor when they find something strange.
Yes, and this was an issue I know, and I saw many times in Arizona, and we really focus, for example, in breast cancer on the value of early diagnosis. Early diagnosis gives you lots of treatment options. And making sure that there were things like mammography available in places that were very isolated and very rural, not expecting women to have to drive 200 miles, for example, to get a mammogram. So those are the kinds of things that make healthcare available, and I think will become even more available with new technologies and under the new healthcare bill.
Before we go to the break, you might just talk a little about your own background. What led you into public service?
I always attribute it to growing up in a family where my father was in higher education. My mother stayed at home but was involved in the community. And that was the value that was spoken about, was investing in something that was beyond your own personal financial gain and being interested in your community and the like. And so it was something that began at the dinner table, I suspect.
And led you into your first position,
I was the United States Attorney for the District of Arizona. So I left the private practice of law, where I'd been a commercial litigator at a big firm in Phoenix and a partner, and took a dive off that diving board into being a prosecutor, and then after 4.5 years ran for elective office.
Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. And when we come back, it's your turn to ask the questions. Send your email. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. This is NPR.
More than half of the nearly 3 million people who have epilepsy in the U.S. are children. What causes childhood epilepsy? Treatments currently available, and advice for families coping with this complex disorder. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back to a conversation with Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. She heads a huge agency with hundreds of thousands of people, and her primary goal is trying to keep this country safe. Let's go first to Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning, Jenny. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I have a comment, really. I just noticed that we're really talking about international security issues. However, recently the movement of a lot of you know, homeland, I guess, organizations, if you want to call it that way, that I feel may pose a security issue for our country is growing, and mainly, you know, is I see it as being influenced by a lot of what's being talked about in the media about the president's nationality and the president's choice of religion. And I'm just wondering, how do you feel about the need to address issues such as, you know, homegrown security problems?
That's an excellent point, and it's really a change I've seen in my 19 months now as the secretary, where we have homegrown violent extremists, sometimes extremists acting in the name of Islam, sometimes extremists acting for other purposes. But we have, you know, that makes a big difference. For example, you know, U.S. citizens have a lot of rights that we need to protect. But we have seen through intelligence and others that the system keeps pinging in the homeland. And you can't just limit homeland security or risk to a few urban areas in the country. You have to understand that there are individuals. Take the Zazi, for example, a case earlier this year. He lived in Denver, you know. So we have to be careful across the country. And that's why when I was speaking earlier about the Homeland Security architecture, it's really designed for the entire country, not just for particular areas.
Thanks for calling, Jenny. Here's an email from Marilyn. She's in Arvada, Colorado. She says, over the past 2 weeks, we've been treated to another flurry of media misinformation in the so-called Ground Zero mosque coverage. Never mind that the proposed Islamic Center is not a mosque and not at Ground Zero. And never mind that the imam is a Sufi who's worked with the Bush and Obama administration. No baseless right-wing generated controversy is too shabby for our mainstream media. New York Times columnist Frank Rich wrote an excellent column yesterday about how this nonsense is playing on Al Jazeera and how the attacks on Islam are hurting us around the Muslim world. What does the secretary think about the impact of this controversy on domestic security?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, I think the issue about, for example, the president's religion and the misinformation about that, he is Christian. He has said that many, many times. I think the important thing and the difficult thing sometimes is getting out facts. So the facts tell the story as opposed to the myths being propagated. And so we just have to keep working toward that. And obviously, the person who wrote this question is very well informed and has the correct facts. We need to just keep pushing that.
Do you have a personal view as to the location of the mosque in New York?
Well, I think you know, I think those kinds of decisions are and should be local decisions. And I think the mayor of New York City should be and is consulting with different stakeholders within the city. And when they reach their decision, then we will respect it and uphold it.
Of course, initially, the mayor approved that location, that decision. Do you believe that that is now under discussion and could change?
I don't know that for a fact, but I do know that a number of stakeholders are providing input to that decision. And again, I think that's a local decision. And so we will respect where they decide that it's proper to locate this Islamic Education Center is really, I think, what it's intended to be. You know, we're coming up on the anniversary of 9/11, and I was at Ground Zero last year for the reading of the names, which is the ceremony they do every year. And I think we ought to focus on that and recognize the terrific difference between terrorists who would conspire to weaponize airplanes and fly them into buildings where Christians and Jews and Muslims worked and died, and keep our focus on that and those who seek to harm us in that fashion.
Do you think the president hurt the cause by making the statement he did on the Saturday after making the statement he did at the dinner for the Muslim community at the White House, saying he supported the choice, that he supported the freedom of religion, and then on Saturday said he wasn't necessarily supporting the wisdom of the choice? Did he hurt the cause?
No, I think he was merely clarifying his position. And I think it's like I said, it is going to be fundamentally a local decision. But we should not ever confuse Islam with terrorism per se. There is terrorism committed in the name of Islam. But the religion, the Islamic religion, is not inherently a terrorist religion.
To southeastern Arizona. Good morning, Sharon. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes. Oh, hi. Yes, I live on the border in southeastern Arizona, about 3 miles. I look out over it daily, and it's beautiful and peaceful, full of mountains and hiking trails. I do not see illegals. Sometimes I'll see the refuge left. We leave our door unlocked when my husband and I go for our five-mile morning walk, and as former governor, I know that Secretary Napolitano knows this area well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In Cochise County. And what has changed is the issue in the issue of border security, as far as those of us that live here in this peace and beauty, is that it's being used because it's an election year. And Senator McCain and Arizona Governor Jan Buhler are using the issue, and I believe that's the problem. And I was wondering if Secretary Napolitano would comment on the political manipulation that is currently occurring.
You know, that is a beautiful area of the state. Are you down near Patagonia in that area?
More in the Hereford, just close to Knoxville.
Oh, great. Yeah, and you're right. The border there and that area is beautiful, and there's just that is a great area. And the border, as you know, is a big, complicated place, and it's 2,000 miles. Some of it is some of the most rugged territory in the United States. I'm not going to get into the political situation in Arizona, except again, to state the facts. The facts are that over the last 18, 19 months, we have put more Border Patrol agents, more technology, more infrastructure into the Arizona border than ever before. And more is on the way. And the bill that just passed by the Senate will enable us not only to put more there, but to make it permanent, to sustain it over time.
But how does Arizona's passing of its own law complicate that?
Well, we don't want 50 different immigration laws around the country. We want one immigration law that we enforce, sometimes in working with state or local law enforcement, but under ways that are, kind of, I don't want to say controlled, but in agreement and cooperation and in teams. And so that is going on. And one thing I do regret is somehow the assumption being made that the federal government is ignoring the border. As you know, being in Cochise County right on the border, I think we're now its largest employer. There's never been a greater federal presence.
The Department of Homeland Security is also responsible for public safety at huge events like the Super Bowl. How do you make that determination as to what events need to be covered and what don't?
We have a process that looks at a number of factors, and I don't want to list all of those, but it looks at a number of factors, and then you know, really the issue is, in a way, is what becomes a national special security event versus something that's local. And when it's when it gets that designation, we pick up a lot of the tab for the security.
Here's a message from Michael in Hawaii. He says, will Ms. Napolitano's department review and revamp the horrible regime to which air travelers are subjected? It's far more theater than actual safeguard. The more ridiculous requirements to remove shoes, the rules against liquid containers of more than 3 ounces, and even, God help us, snow globes do nothing to make us safer.
I disagree. The intel is that aviation remains a target, unfortunately. And we have examples where liquids were being brought onto planes through a variety of ways, and we have to minimize the risk of those. And we had the shoe bomber, Richard Reed, and we are working with our technology group to see if we can identify ways so that we can alleviate some of those requirements, like taking off your shoes. But we're not there yet, and our goal is to keep aviation safe. And so we ask the understanding, and we get the understanding of the traveling public.
To Leesburg, Florida. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I was at the very beginning of your interview. There was discussion of having citizens report on people taking pictures. I'm a photographer by profession. I make a good living at it. I frequently take pictures of public infrastructure, public utilities, all kinds of architecture, mm-hmm. and I have been stopped by a number of people and asked what I am doing.
Yes.
And I believe that this entire thing is based on at least the larger questions. What would have happened if I were a Muslim photographer, a Muslim American, I'm sorry, what would have happened to me had that been the case? Number one. Number two, the paranoia that has been created since 9/11 has been the foundation for basically a surveillance state. Ms. Napolitano says that we're working with people to figure out what happened with the BP oil spill. How come photographers were kept away from that? How come corporate interests were served in keeping the photographers away from that? Number one. Number two, you have the surveillance state. There are cameras that the government has put on every light post that are looking at me. And then you say, well, you know, we're going to have citizens. You're making the Stasi from Old East Germany look relatively amateurish.
Well, obviously, I disagree. But let me just take a few of your points and respond. BP, we had hundreds of photographers that were on site. There was one incident out of hundreds where there was a misunderstanding about a photographer being allowed on a Coast Guard vessel. That was quickly cleared up. And by the way, everybody could watch BP 24/7 from the ROVs that were broadcasting on national TV. So we literally had hundreds of embedded journalists in the recovery flotilla. So I think there was taken out of context or blown up information. Blown up is probably not the right word to use, but taken out of context information about that. There's been more access to BP than you can possibly imagine. Second, it's not a surveillance state. There is important infrastructure that we want to protect. We do that in light of risks that we know about. If a question is asked and you just say, look, I'm a photographer and this is my living and this is what I do, that's the answer to the question. It doesn't go further than that. So it's all about everybody having a shared responsibility for our security.
And just to follow up on that, two questions. Our caller asked, what if that had been a Muslim American taking those photographs? Might the reaction have been more knee-jerk, and might authorities have been called in?
Well, obviously, we always are looking for ethnic or religious or racial profiling in a lot of different law enforcement contexts. when we started the If You See Something, Say Something campaigns, these have already been piloted in places like New York City to make sure that we have built in from the beginning appropriate civil liberties and privacy protections. And so we're pretty confident that the program will work and be a good way to involve the citizenry in their own security.
And here is a final email. Apparently there were a number on this very track. Glenn in Neptune Beach, Florida says, why are there different numbers for See Something, Say Something? Wouldn't you want to apply one universal number that's easy to remember and can be distributed to anyone, anywhere?
Ideally, that's where we want to get to. But to start, this is being used by or adopted by different localities in different places across the country. It's not quite national yet. We're still in the beginning stages, but that's where we're going.
Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, she is the former governor of Arizona and currently the head of a huge organization. Thank you so much for your grace, for being here, for your good humor.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.